Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Friday, February 21st, 2025. Have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 4:30 today, we're going to talk to Mitch Wayne about Tri-City Curling Club, get to know a little bit more about what they're doing over there and what they have upcoming. Right now, joining us monthly on the phone line right now, Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston. Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, James. Yourself?
Doing good. I was looking forward to this in a conversation all week. And one of the things that I was looking forward to talking with you about is your listening sessions. You've been doing a bit of these, a little bit more, getting out there and shaking some hands and hearing some questions from people. How has that been going?
It's been going great. In fact, earlier today, Representative Krug and I hosted a listening session at Macmillan Library at noon. And now is the chance and opportunity to for individuals to come out, give us your input as we gear up for the state budget that the governor introduced on Tuesday. And then also, as a member of the Joint Finance Committee, although it hasn't been made official yet and hasn't been hammered, all the details haven't been hammered out yet, I'm really hoping that I can get the Joint Finance Committee to come to the 24th Senate District, either Stevens Point or Wisconsin Rapids, to allow individuals to come out and tell us what they'd like to see in the budget, what they don't like, make changes, edits, and it's just now is the time for folks to give us input on legislation, the budget, and everything else, and everything in between.
We're going to get into the budget in a moment, but regarding the listening sessions and the importance of this, longtime listeners will know you and I, we will have fun, we'll laugh, we also butt heads sometimes, but we have open and dialect and open conversations with each other and open respect. And I want to just, I don't think we do this nearly enough with our representatives, with our politicians. I respect this so much and I appreciate this so much. I appreciate you, Representative Krug, and other individuals doing things like this in our communities, and not just here in Wisconsin, but around the country. We need more of this. I admire it, and I appreciate it, sir. Thank you for doing these things. I know it's part of your job, and you're probably just saying that, why is he thanking me? This is part of my job. But we don't have enough of this anymore, and I value this in our society.
Well, and I do, too. And, obviously not everyone's always going to agree, and sometimes people will be very passionate about issues, and sometimes emotions get a little raw, but I think it's critically important because, one, it gives us a good feel and tenor for where the general public is at. And also, it's an opportunity for us to think in ways that maybe we wouldn't necessarily do ourselves. So getting perspectives from other individuals, I think, is critically important because, that's often a very powerful tool when we start having conversations with our colleagues, because the truth of the matter is oftentimes, and I've done it myself, where when we have discussions down in Madison on key policy proposals and the hot button topics of the day, it's very, very easy for us to fall into this trap where all we think about is what occurs under that dome or that bubble in Madison. And we oftentimes and can lose sight of the bigger picture of how, what we're discussing down in Madison impacts people back home, both directly and indirectly.
And now let's fight. No, I'm joking. the governor the other day addressed the budget, and you've touched on this a little bit already. So can you give your reaction to that? And let's talk about the work that's going to be done to put this together.
Yeah, so Tuesday night, the governor gave his budget address. And, we're still paging through it. This was actually sort of a unique circumstance because typically we normally get the budget in brief, usually a day or two in advance of the budget address, just so we can start kind of perusing the highlights. We actually didn't receive the budget in brief until the day after the governor gave a speech. So for many of us, the reactions that we gave were based on, his speech. And from my standpoint, I'm a tad bit concerned because the governor laid out roughly a 20% increase in government spending. Wants to increase the government workforce by 1,300 workers, which is an astronomical amount, wants to increase taxes. And so my initial thoughts and concerns are a lot of this is going to be likely dead on arrival. And so what the Joint Finance Committee is going to do is similar to what we've done both under Governor Evers as well as Governor Walker, is that we are going to strip out all the policy provisions within the budget. We are going to start from the base budget, which is operating under the current state biennial budget right now, and then we're going to build upon that. Because this is the one number I really want to stress home, because a lot of attention and conversation has circled around our roughly $4.3 billion surplus. Now, roughly $1.85 billion of that surplus is new money, money that we think we can reinvest without creating a fiscal cliff. And the rest of that is one-time money from things that we tried to get done in the last biennium, as well as collections of sales revenue and things that have been on the up primarily because of inflation. And so when we talk about the state budget at large and the state surplus, just know that roughly half of that $4 billion is only new revenue that can safely be reinvested.
And this is one of those ones, too, that we I think that everybody needs some time with to assess. And given that I think most of us understand the game by now, it's you know, bartering. It's kind of, hey, how about this much for it? No? How about this much for it? And you guys are going to go back and forth on this one until we kind of get a set decision on it. We'll see how that one develops. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it probably next month as well. But I would like to take some time to talk about Senate Bill 23 with you. This is one that has already happened, and this is one that is, I think, going to take a big effect on a lot of people.
Is that regarding the school test scores?
Nope, I apologize. That is the Act to Amend 4946. It's basically related to extension of eligibility under the medical assistance program for postpartum women.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was a bill that we heard in the Senate Health Committee about a week ago now. And this is legislation that has essentially passed the state Senate last session unanimously. It has a major obstacle in the state assembly, and that's primarily with the speaker, who has some concerns there. But we think it's vitally important. 48 other states have extended postpartum coverage to 12 months. And so, you know, the testimony that we heard from individuals, and a lot of it was from moms themselves who came down and talked about some of the challenges and the struggles that they faced after they gave birth to their kids. And so from our standpoint, it's the right thing to do. And I'm hoping at some point we can convince folks in the assembly to get this done. And so, by and large, I think we're on track to once again here in the state Senate to pass it with broad bipartisan support. My guess is it's likely going to be a unanimous vote in our House, but, you know, we still have some work to do with a key individual over in the Assembly, and I'm hoping that we can make a strong case, and this is one that can get signed into law, because the only other state in the country that doesn't extend postpartum coverage to 12 months is Arkansas, and it was kind of comical in the Senate committee hearing in the Health Committee. It seemed like we were picking a lot on Arkansas, which isn't necessarily the case, but I hope we can get it done.
Brett Bielema going there and everything. I mean, that kind of started the trend.
Yeah, no kidding.
I joke a little bit about this one, this subject in particular, not because there's anything to joke about, but in part that it's hard to imagine anybody pushing against this. This feels like one of the more, and I don't want to say any bill is easy to get forward, and certainly you're touching on some of that, but this does seem like one of those ones that takes care of something that it catches us up with the rest of the union. And to that point, with the lack of economy and the way that we have been affected the last couple of winters, especially our friends up north, I'm curious about these things that it does feel like we are lagging a little bit behind on when we look at neighboring states or we just look at the union in general. There's a couple of topics that are like that. I imagine that you and your colleagues are noticing this as well and trying to address this to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, this is, going back to the postpartum discussion, the primary roadblock that we've hit and run into, and the speaker has raised concerns, and, you know, he is very much concerned that this is an expansion of a welfare program, which I suppose there is maybe a potential aspect or lens that you could see that through, but when you've got everyone coming to the table, private insurance companies, organizations that historically have been diametrically opposed to one another from both the left and the right, who are saying, no, this is the right thing to do. My hope is that we can continue to make and mount that case. But as you alluded to, there are other issues out there that, you know, we have been slow to change. And, you know, one being things like medical marijuana, which I am currently in the process of drafting the bill. It's not going to be likely as expansive as I would have liked or the bill that I had offered back in 2019, but we're having conversations with stakeholders and seeing what is palatable that we think we can get done. Because again, as you referenced, we are an outlier on this front. And so I'm hoping we can, we're going to craft a bill that will create a framework for a medical cannabis program here in the state.
We're speaking with Senator Patrick Teston right now. And sir, this, I think, that's last conversation ties into this next one, I feel. And I want to direct people to a great article by Terry Barr at civicmedia.us about why farmers are facing an uncertainty with contracts being suspended. Dairy farmers across the state are struggling with questions after our government and some others have impacted environmental agreements. The Wisconsin farmers are facing significant uncertainty with some of the more recent suspensions that have happened. One farmer, quote, has already estimated that $30,000 loss following the governor's decision to put the brakes on specific contracts meant to support environmental sustainable farming practices. There's a lot of layers to this one, and we only have so much time. So I don't mean to take too much time on this one, but given what we were just talking about, and we all understand how difficult it is for farmers in our ag industry and how vital the ag industry is in this state in particular, more than most, this has got to be something that you and your colleagues are aware of. And I'm curious how much conversation you do, how much you do representing of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great segue. In fact, I just had the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection Secretary in my office to discuss some of the challenges that are being faced by our farmers. And it's no question that, you know, our farmers, they take lumps every single year, and some of them are deep bruises, and some of them are not so bad, but it's always a challenge, right? And so one of the things that we continue to have conversations about, and I give Secretary Romanski, who's actually a Wisconsin Rapids native, a lot of credit because, you know, he has come to the table with innovative ideas, and he's done a great job in working with our ag community and as well as the legislature to support programs and initiatives that help increase exports. In fact, in my conversations with folks over at the Farm Bureau and the Wisconsin Dairy Business Association, we actually saw an increase in our exports for dairy products here in the state, which was sort of an outlier compared to some of our other states that we compete with in the dairy industry. But even though it was a decent year, there are still are challenges. I mean, I think as we take a look at the demographics of our farmers, the average age of our dairy farmer here in the state is now approaching over 60 years old, and trying to find that next generation to take up that mantle. I certainly don't want to ever find ourselves in a position where where kids in the classroom open up textbooks and they see, well, Wisconsin used to be the dairy land of the United States. And I just want to make sure that we are doing everything that we can to position all of our farmers, not just dairy, but our potato and vegetable growers, our cranberry growers, and everything in between, that we are continuing to do what we can to support our ag economy, which is one of the cornerstones of our state's economy.
You mentioned meeting recently with local members of the Wisconsin Future Farmers of America. Is this a big part of the discussion of what we're talking about right here?
It certainly was. It was actually fun because prior to meeting with the FFA students, I sat down for an interview with an ag publication, and one of the questions that they asked me was, well, what do you try and teach the kids that come down? And I started to laugh, and I said, I think they normally teach me something new that I didn't know every time these students come down, because they really are they are burgeoning leaders within their peers, I learned something from one of the students who grows a specialty crop, sunflowers, and her and her dad press those sunflowers into oil and other types of products, and and they're right out of the Amherst area. And so it was, it's always fun, and they had great questions, but more importantly, the interaction that they had and the questions that they asked were really impressive. And so, so long as we have students like that who are actively engaged and have an interest in agriculture, I know the future is bright for the state.
The other morning, you had a positive meeting with several students from Mid-State Technical College talking about the future of our state. How did that go?
It went great as well. I mean, I think anytime we can have students come down, whether they're middle school, high school, and college, and engage in the legislative process, I think that's awesome. So we had a good conversation as far as what the technical colleges are looking for in the state budget, whether it's educational resources, open educational resources, which are a great tool that we funded in last budget, and we want to keep going because this helps lower the cost for students as it relates to some of their textbooks and other sort of training materials that are shared throughout the entire tech colleges. And what makes asks like that so easy is when you have great institutions like Mid-State Technical College. I mean, I am truly, truly blessed to have such a great institution in our backyard. And with the work that President Mondike has been doing with her leadership team, it makes it a really easy sell when we get into those negotiating rooms with our colleagues on the finance committee to make the case as to why we need to continue these investments. Because ultimately, the way I view it, our technical colleges, they are the ones closest with their ear to the ground, talking to our employers, making adjustments as far as the programs that they offer. And they are kicking out some of the best talent that we have with great education through the doors in 2 years or less, with less debt, where the demand is through the roof, where, you know, recent graduates can start off making 80 to 100 grand a year. So, from my standpoint, the tech colleges give us some of the best bang for our buck, and certainly the students that came down to advocate for what the tech colleges are looking for in this next state budget were a prime example of that.
And we'll get to we'll wrap up with the On the Job series in a moment, but I did want to take a second to highlight Pamela Severson. You recently had her down, and she had a legislative citation and a U.S. flag that was flown over the state capitol for this.
Well, actually, I got to go up and visit Pam. So Pam Severson just retired from Fort McCoy and talked about a tremendous career of public service, nearly 30 years. And she essentially ran all of the logistics, the planes, trains, trucks, helicopters at Fort McCoy. And so she was responsible for all the logistics for all the different divisions and regiments that come in from around the surrounding states that Fort McCoy services. And, what was so great talking to not just Pam and her family, but many of her coworkers who've known her for years, just talked about just what a incredible person that she was always happy and positive, and was really about building the team, and more importantly, making sure that everyone understood their mission at Fort McCoy, which was servicing our men and women, making sure that they had the resources that they need. So as they trained and got ready for their deployments, whether in different parts of the country or around the globe, and even in conflict areas, that they would be able to do so safely and in a timely manner. And so it was a great celebration, and there a lot of tears were had by Pam and her family from some of the stories that were shared and retold, but truly a great opportunity to highlight someone who has basically given her life to public service and serving her country, and wish her and her husband the best. I think she had mentioned that in retirement, her hope is to refurbish an old school bus so that her and her husband can travel the country. So I wish her the best of luck, and God bless her for her service.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely worth noting, and thank you for sharing that, sir. And wrapping up, you had your recent On the Job series. You were in Toma.
I was. This was a fun one. So I spent the day at Strike Zone, which is in downtown Toma on Superior Ave. You can't miss it. It takes up a whole city block. And I got to work alongside Ty, who is the GM and part owner. And it's a facility, as far as he knows, has been around since like 1912 or 1914. They've got 12 lanes. And let me tell you something about Ty. He is a much better bowler than I am. In fact, when we sat down, I asked him, so how's your bowling game? And he said, well, I average about 225, to which I think my jaw hit the floor. Because if I can break 100 on a good day, that's a banner day for me. But
you wouldn't be both.
It was really neat. I got to help oil the lanes, which has a really advanced robot that does that, and which I didn't know anything about. Got to go behind the scenes and see how the pin setters operate and do some repairs there. And what's always fun for me, you know, one of my first jobs back in high school, I worked at a family restaurant in Menominee, Michigan, and, you know, started off as a busboy, worked my way as a prep cook, and then eventually a line cook. So it's always fun when I can get back into a kitchen and work the line and help cook orders and wait and serve tables. And then probably the most interesting thing at the end of the day, actually got to drill some holes in a bowling ball, which, I'm thinking, how technical can this be, right? Because three holes, you got two fingers, a thumb.
Yeah.
There is an absolute science behind this, which it was really impressive because it was neat. Ton of fun. But again, this is why we have done this program now for going on 8 years. It's just such an incredible value to me to go out and not just highlight some of our great employers throughout the district, but I always come back learning something new, and just gives me such a better perspective. So as I always do, it's a shameless plug. If you're an employer here in the 24th Senate District and you want me to come out and work for a day, just reach out to my office. And as I always joke, the best part is at the end of the day, you get to fire me. So put me to work and give me a pink slip at the end of the day.
Always appreciate the time, sir. And you know, just to touch on, we started full circle here. We started talking about listening sessions, and very similar with the on the job series, you being able to talk to constituents, talk to people right on the ground level. I appreciate that. If people have follow-up questions, they'd like to know more, reach out to you. How can they do that?
Yeah, if anyone needs to get in touch with my legislative office, reach out. Our phone number is 608-266-3123. You can shoot us an email at sen.mylastnametestin@legis.wi.gov. You can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, the whole works. And, of course, if you ever want to meet in person, just reach out, give us a call. I'm more than happy to do that. And now is really a critical point to be in contact with your elected officials down in Madison, as we have just now, we are out of the starting gate for the state budget. So myself and others are going to be going around our respective districts to receive feedback and input from our constituents. And so I would just encourage people to be engaged and, you know, share your thoughts, your ideas. And even if we don't necessarily always agree, that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's how this process works. And it's such a huge advantage when we receive as much public input as possible. So. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned, and it's going to be a busy next couple months.
Appreciate the time as always, sir. Safe travels out there. We'll talk next month.
Look forward to it.
More coming up here at WFHR.